Hello, everyone. Welcome to Immigration Short Takes, Mobility in the Time of COVID-19. We're a production of the Zolberg Institute on Migration and Mobility, and I'm Alex Zelenikov. We're speaking today with Gregory Maniatis, Director of the International Migration Initiative at the Open Society Foundations. Gregory, welcome.
Thank you, Alex, for having me. I really look forward to the conversation.
Gregory, you've organized a terrific global discussion about the pandemic and migration, and I know you've thought deeply about a wide range of topics. I'd like to talk with you today about the access of migrants to treatment and a vaccine should it arrive, and the possible creation of what you have called a caste system of treatment and immunity. Can you talk about what you see coming regarding contact tracing in immigrant communities, particularly undocumented communities?
Thanks, Alex. So we are already seeing in the United States, and I think there are iterations of this in other parts of the world, that immigrants writ large, undocumented immigrants especially, are both for socioeconomic reasons having difficulty accessing the healthcare system. That is a challenge that faces a lot of minorities, African-Americans and others as well. But it plays out in particular with undocumented immigrants who, for a variety of reasons, including just not having healthcare, not having access because of language or other reasons, but especially because of fear, are reluctant to seek treatment for any illness and now for potentially COVID. And their reluctance is, of course, the result of enforcement measures by the Trump administration, by ICE, that even at the beginning stages of this pandemic, were playing out in healthcare settings. So if you now extend that into what still appears to be the best means that we have to be able to restart the economy and to restart people's movement in our communities, which is contact tracing, you have to ask yourself the question of if somebody is sick and is reluctant to go and engage with the establishment, the institutions of our societies, like hospitals, how will they feel when they are asked by a government hire, an employee, a staffer, a consultant, a contact tracer, in other words, to reveal their movements and all their contacts over the course of the previous 48, 72 hours? If they don't, that subverts the system, which is meant to both control the pandemic and also allow us to have the confidence to move around our towns and cities again. So I think it's a challenge that we have to take on. It segues into other challenges, right? So clearly, contact tracing relates to antibody testing, which also relates to the idea of some kind of immunity mobility passport, which then ultimately connects to a vaccine and access to the vaccine.
Well, let's back up on those. From sure. What I'm hearing you say in your first answer is this: well, if undocumented migrants are unwilling to participate in the contact tracing, it will have a dramatic impact on their communities, and it will again sort of create these different populations with different implications for the impact of the disease. But say what you were saying about antibody testing. What how will this play out in that situation?
Sure. So just to be clear, the concern with respect to contact tracing is certainly about the impact on immigrant communities themselves. But for contact tracing to work for everyone, it has to involve everyone. And especially given that the pandemic has created a revelation about who is essential and who is making our societies work, a lot of the times it's undocumented immigrants. So the risk isn't just to them, it's to all of us. If no one, you know, if everyone is not protected, no one is protected. If everyone's not participating in contact tracing, it might as well be as if no one is participating if those people who are potential carriers are not isolated. I want to just also say, I don't want to put the onus on the communities, just in just a question of language really, Alex, which is, if we don't design a system of contact tracing that engages and supports everyone, the system will have failed.
And what's the way of doing that? If you've just said that undocumented migrants are unlike, or there may be that they would be unlikely to participate for fear of giving information to the government, do you think it's possible in the current climate in the United States to create a system where people will believe promises that by the government that there will be no untoward consequences from participating?
Yeah, so I think that there's really just to give you some design ideas that I think would create better odds of that happening. So first, there's a general design debate around who has access to the data that's generated by contact tracing apps. Clearly, we have to make sure for all of our benefit that the most secure system is put in place so that the data is not centralized and the government does not have access to that contact tracing data. So that's one point. The second point is, sure, I think we can get a relatively high level of participation from undocumented immigrants. By the way, they're not the only problem, right? So what was the survey yesterday that 50% of Americans might not take the COVID vaccine? So these kinds of, you know, obstacles are gonna be immense for us. But in this case, if we work with organizations that are in the communities, if we have trusted interlocutors of undocumented immigrants, I think that they will participate. So right now, just to give an example, we have at OSF been helping set up something like 25 funds around the country in cities, states, and counties to support undocumented immigrants. And a design challenge there has been, who is the interlocutor with the undocumented who is trusted enough for them to be able to go and say, you know, here's $500, we need some basic information. And it's working all over the country. So we know that we can do that. And the third is that if you are asking people to participate in a contact tracing program, what you're also asking them to do is to isolate themselves if they have the virus. In order to do that, you have to support them. So there has to be financial support that comes along with the contact tracing process. I think, interestingly, it could happen because this is going to be a national, you know, a series of local and state programs, hopefully eventually a national program. And everyone should understand the importance of incorporating all of our neighbors in the process.
Greer, I know you have some concerns about how access to a vaccine will be worked out, particularly for migrants, for people on the move. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So the bridge between maybe contact tracing and the vaccine is just access to antibody testing, right? So the our ability to move, our ability to participate in the workforce, will be seriously enabled by our ability to test, to be tested. Now, in some contexts, that will happen because the employers have a very high incentive to make sure that the employees are tested in, say, the meatpacking plants. But generally speaking, access to testing will be your ticket to mobility until there is a vaccine. So that's a kind of bridge between the two. The vaccine is, looking to become a kind of arms race amongst nations. And it's clear that at this stage still, the access to a vaccine will be fought. The fight will be at the state level. Countries will compete with each other to get access to that vaccine in a kind of priority order. And that matters, obviously, right? So if you were sitting in a neutral position, you would probably say that the people who need the vaccine the most are the ones who are on the move. And in that frame, you would say, hey, migrants, refugees, probably should be really high up on the list. But the reality is that migrants and refugees don't really yet have a seat at the table. It might be true that the multilateral system, that the UN, HCR, the IOM, others, the ILO might be able to array themselves in a way that allows them to be powerful advocates for the people on the move. but there's absolutely no certainty about that. So the question becomes, how do you get a seat at the table for those people who are on the move? Because a lot of them don't have state representation, starting with the stateless. But then, you know, lots of refugees are at the bottom of the list for the states in which they find themselves. So can we figure out a way to make sure that this category of people who perhaps most need the vaccine are represented in the debate at the state-to-state, country-to-country level, but then also within that competition amongst states, within states as well, there is going to be a pretty fierce battle about who has access to the vaccine. And so in a country like the United States, there's going to have to be real consideration given to access to the vaccine for refugees and immigrants. Now, again, you go back to the undocumented population. We have members of Congress who are trying to deny undocumented access to healthcare in the middle of the pandemic. They're trying to deny them any kind of support. So it will be a battle within countries and between countries.
Yeah, and they're two very different questions, aren't they? Because one, the answer on the first one might simply be, look, there's not going to be a problem with vaccines for people on the move because they're just not going to be people on the move. States are going to continue these border controls for some time. And I wonder what you think in terms of a broader issue of mobility in general, not only now, but in a slightly post-COVID era, if we're moving out of a COVID era or will over the next year or two, even before a vaccine is fully established and spread. What do you think the mobility system will look like in that world?
Well, I can only, I cannot do better than what my former colleague Megan Benton at the Migration Policy Institute just said a couple of hours ago, which is that public health is the new security. We are seeing that already in the United States and in many other countries. There are 161 countries where movement has been restricted. There are 60 plus countries where asylum processing has been suspended. I think this goes right back into the question of antibody testing and vaccine access. If you want to go to certain countries right now, Greece, my own country, just a few hours ago announced the list of countries from which it will accept tourists. The US is not amongst them, nor is the UK. I think that what we'll see is there will be some form of medical travel certificate. I mean, we already have them in a way, right? So we all have, those of us who travel to some parts of the world have the little yellow booklets with our vaccination schedule. So it's not really that different, I guess, on some level. I think what's different is in 2020, the ability of the governments to use public health data against you in other ways, right? No one has access to my little yellow vaccine book. I just have to show it once when I go into a country to say that I have a vaccine for this or for that. If the systems that we designed for, you know, contact tracing and internal mobility are end up handing the government a lot of other data, I think it will be perilous. So yeah, that's the future of movement.
Right. So it sounds like less on border control and more on almost data control, or data control is a way to control. Greg, your time for just one more question. You mentioned immunity passports earlier. Can you say a word about, do you think we will see immunity passports, and what's your view about their efficacy or morality?
It's a really spirited debate, right? It's waxed and waned over the course of the past few weeks. The immunity passports were all the rage about a month ago. We see less of it now. Whether we call it an immunity passport or some other name, I think we will see something along those lines. You will need to have some proof of health to be able to travel across borders, I think, in ways that we haven't seen in recent years. When you land in Vienna, you have to either quarantine yourself for 2 weeks or take an antibody test on the spot, same in Hong Kong and elsewhere. I can't see that infrastructure going away, especially in a world where traveling from town to town, if you're from New York City, going out to a beach in Long Island, you're suspect. I think one of the ways that I've tried to make sense of the world is that, or at least to put an optimistic cast on what we've seen over the past few months, is that at least those, for immigrants who are already within a country, they're in a kind of musical chairs lucky spot. They've landed someplace where there is, I think, a somewhat greater sense of solidarity and compassion with immigrants as a result of their role in the pandemic as essential workers. I think if you're not in a place at this point and for the next few years, it's going to be really difficult, which, just to give another, I think, angle on this, we'll see a lot more human trafficking and smuggling going on.
Gregory, thanks so much for being with us. It's been terrific talking. And
thanks for having me, Alex. Thanks to everyone for joining us.
Concludes our short take, and I want to thank Catherine McGann of the Zollberg Institute for the technological help on putting this together. Good day to everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.